Coming up today, we'll hear about a new law being proposed in Ohio that would bring education back to its roots. Dr. Jamison Taylor and Representative Kevin Ritter will join us.
Education is fundamentally about teaching what is good, teaching what is true, teaching what is beautiful. And so you can't just remove the DEI and the Marxism. You have to replace it with positive content, and that's what Representative Ritter's bill is about.
Then staff writer Matthew White will be with us to talk about Memorial Day and the estimated 1.1 million fallen soldiers we remember.
But the number is really much greater than that, because that doesn't take into account the spouses, the children, the families that are left to live the rest of their lives with that loss.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Well, welcome to the program today. Here at American Family Association, a lot of things go on that you may not be aware of. For example, our public policy arm, AFA Action, is working with state leaders across the country to develop and implement laws and policies that reflect our Judeo-Christian heritage. Dr. Jamison Taylor is director of the Center for Governmental Renewal, which is part of AFA Action, and is spearheading that effort. He's got an article in this month's The Stand magazine called AFA Action Impacts Public School Policy. Dr. Taylor, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on the show today, Jeff.
And also joining us is Republican Ohio State Representative Kevin Ritter, currently serving his first term representing the 94th House District. He's just introduced a bill that promotes character education in the state's public schools. Representative Ritter, it's great to have you as well.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you.
I'm going to start with you. The Ohio bill is called the Thrive Act. That stands for Teaching Honesty, Respect, Individual Responsibility, Virtue, and Excellence. That's a lot. Representative Ritter, can you tell us how this would work in public schools there in Ohio?
Sure, Jeff. Basically, what we're trying to address is a deficit in character education that we're seeing in some of our schools. You know, I think in Ohio, we're doing a good job of teaching math and science and some of the other hard subjects in most of our schools. But what we're hearing from employers is kids are lacking what they call soft skills. The knowledge that it's important you show up on time, that you treat others with respect, you have a respect for legitimate authority. Those sorts of things seem to be lacking. So what our bill does is works that into the curriculum, that virtue education, that character education, in grades 6 through 12.
That is exciting. I'm looking at some of these different character qualities that they will teach. Number 12 on the list that I've got here is respect for lifelong marriage, sexual fidelity within marriage, and sexual abstinence outside of marriage. These are fantastic qualities. I think it reminds me of things that your grandmother would teach you. It's sort of common sense, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, truth doesn't have an expiration date. These are things that we heard from our parents, from our grandparents. We used to teach the rising generation these things, and it made life easier. And for whatever reason, we've gotten away from teaching some of these basic truths. So we're going to try to do that.
In this bill, you teach character skills alongside what's called the success sequence. What are those basic steps for success that you see?
Yeah, the success sequence is an idea that's been around for a couple decades now, and basically it has three components. It says a young person has a great chance for success if they'll do these three things in this order, and that is graduate high school, obtain a full-time job, and get married before having children.
Jamison, let me come to you because I think some people are thinking, can you really get away with this in public schools? When it comes to shaping policy that promotes character development and morality, exactly what does federal law allow the states to do?
Well, you know, federal law allows quite a bit of leeway in this area. I think for so long, we've thought about what we can't do in this area. You know, as you suggested, what can we get away with here? Actually, the way to think about it is to flip the question. That it's not about what the federal government is going to allow states to do. It's for states to think about what is best for us to do in our schools, what's going to be best for our students to become the best version of themselves. And really, you know, as I pointed out, federal law allows states to do quite a bit. So in terms of teaching character education, teaching the success sequence, absolutely states can teach that. We already have a situation in our schools where character education is occurring, but it's the wrong kind of character education. Right. It's called DEI. I mean, DEI is a quasi-moralistic program that is using leftist propaganda to reshape kids. And so we've seen conservatives around the country and parents around the country saying, hey, I don't want my kids learning this racist junk, this DEI. And so there's been a focus on removing DEI and removing Marxism from public schools, and that's great. But education has always been about, and education is fundamentally about, teaching what is good, teaching what is true, teaching what is beautiful. And so you can't just remove the DEI and the Marxism. You have to replace it with positive content, and that's what Representative Ritter's bill is about, the Thrive Act. It's about providing this positive content, positive life lessons that kids can use, bring into the workplace, bring into their relationships with their friends, with their parents, with their employers, fellow employees, bring these skills into their life, and that's going to be how they find prosperity and how they thrive.
Yeah, very, very good. Representative Ritter, the objection may come up to say that aren't parents supposed to be the ones to teach responsibility and good character? What's your response to that?
Well, that is absolutely true. Parents are our kids' first teachers, but sadly, we see situations throughout the country where parents are not giving the sort of character education that young people need. Maybe it's a situation where there's a broken family or there's substance abuse or some other issue going on. We don't want to just give up on those children because mom and dad are struggling. Those kids are going to be in school 8-9 hours a day. We want to make sure that they hear these positive ideas every day.
Yeah. Give us a sense of what the public schools are like now. I come from another generation. I think all three of us are from a time past where some of these character traits were common in schools. What's the temperature and the atmosphere like in the public schools today, Representative Ritter?
You know, it varies significantly from district to district. I'm in the southeastern part of the state. We're very Appalachian, very conservative. I think our kids are more apt to hear these sorts of things in their schools. You go to other parts of the state where things are a little more progressive. Jameson mentioned it. You're going to hear a lot of the DEI training, that philosophy. So I think there's a great deal of variance around the state. We want to bring a common standard. Again, truth is going to be important regardless of the setting. So we want to make sure the kids in Cleveland, in Cincinnati, in Columbus are hearing the exact same things that kids in rural Ohio are hearing.
Tell us how this works. So the Department of Education in Ohio will actually formulate the curriculum, and then how do the local school districts apply what is given to them?
The local school will participate in the sense they'll decide how to work this into their own curriculum. They'll put together, for lack of a better term, a study committee. One school may decide to teach these concepts in a health class, for instance. Another school may work it into their social studies or their history curriculum. So there's going to be a wide latitude for the schools to decide where this character education really fits best.
Mm-hmm. What kind of opposition or support have you gotten there in Ohio on this bill?
You know, I'm very pleased to say it's been all support to this point. I'm very, very lucky. I've got a joint sponsor, Representative Jonathan Newman's from the other side of the state. Jonathan is a pastor by training, so this is right up his alley. In addition to his joint sponsorship, we've got 15 co-sponsors that have signed on to the legislation. So we've really hit the ground running. I'm sure that we'll hear some opposition at some point, But so far, it's been very positive.
Jameson, what's the biggest challenge that you see with some of these ideas that we want to bring into the public schools to teach character development and morality? What's the biggest challenge with that?
Well, I think the biggest challenge and the biggest obstacle is schools already have a lot on their plate. You know, teachers, they have lots of tests that they have to give, and some of this is coming from federal regulations. Maybe some of those are going to be rolled back a little bit under the Trump administration. But obviously, teachers are busy, school administrators are busy. And so we want to make sure that we're not just giving them something else to do. And I think there's just going to be a kind of, sometimes there's a general resistance, like, oh, this is another thing that we have to teach. But as Representative Ritter pointed out, these lessons can be incorporated into the existing curricula. And really, this is what schools used to do. I mean, teaching character, having life lessons, these are things that you would learn at home. You'd go to school, you'd learn it. You'd go to the public library, you'd pick up a biography of George Washington or whatever it may be, and you would learn these same lessons. So really, we're not asking the schools to do something new. We're asking them to go back to what they used to be doing that really worked, that created some of the greatest generations in American history, that created this incredible progress and prosperity that we have in the United States, which we know is based upon virtue. It's based upon, you know, people showing up for work on time, doing a good job at work, people respecting one another, us maybe having disagreeing, but we can disagree respectfully. And these are the types of lessons that the Thrive Act teaches. So, you know, it's kind of typical, the idea, what's the biggest obstacle to doing good? Well, sometimes we just don't want to get off the couch and do good. You know, it's like going to the gym or something like that.
Exactly.
So it's not that people are objecting to the content in the bill. It's just that they need encouragement to see, hey, this is really going to help out our kids. And I know from where I sit, these are definitely lessons that our kids need to know. Unfortunately, they're not hearing it. They're not getting the good role models that they used to get.
Yeah. Well, Representative Ritter, you are certainly not sitting on the couch with this, and we are excited about this bill. Now, give us a sense of the timeline and what you expect, and do you expect this to pass?
I think we will ultimately pass. Timeline, we will have our first hearing, I believe, next week, next Tuesday. Folks can certainly be praying about that. There are three readings required before we vote it out of committee. So I think we'll probably get out of committee in the next month and head to the floor at that point. I'm hoping to have this finished before our summer recess, which is at the end of June.
Well, we need to make that a matter of prayer for sure. Dr. Taylor, as director of the Center for Governmental Renewal, is this something that you're working to get into other states as well?
Yes, there are other states that are looking at this. Texas has been a pioneer in this. They passed a law a couple of years ago to start to require character education. And their bill got watered down a little bit through the process. So the Texas legislation is not quite a model, but there are other states out there that are working on similar concepts. Because I think there's been an awareness now, you know, what I said earlier, that, hey, it's not just enough to remove the bad content. We need to put good content in our schools. We need to show kids how they can be successful. We can't just presume that they know how. So there is a renaissance, I think, in teaching these life lessons. So I'm very excited about what's going to be happening in Ohio. Ohio has an opportunity to be a real leader in this area. And I think it's going to really complement some of the things that you're seeing other folks around the state talk about, that Ohio is kind of on the cusp of entering a new golden age where their economy can really grow, where people are no longer moving out as much, but they're looking to Ohio to be really a center of opportunity and success. So I encourage people, call your Ohio lawmakers and ask them to support this bill. This is a great bill. This is a bipartisan bill that's going to help kids no matter where they live and where they're coming from.
All right. As you've heard, it's important that the legislators hear from their constituents there in Ohio for this very important bill put forth from our guest, Representative Kevin Ritter, who's currently serving his first term representing the 94th House District. Once again, the bill is called the Thrive Act. It stands for Teaching Honesty, Respect, Individual Responsibility, Virtue, and Excellence, and it's intended for grades 6 through 12. This is really one tangible way that, as Jameson said, we can do more than simply curse the darkness, and there's plenty of it. but we have to understand there's no such thing as a moral vacuum. Someone's morality is going to set the standard, and this bill will go a long way to restore some of those values that have been long missing from public school classrooms. Now, this may also be something that you would like to see in your state. There's no reason we can't see this kind of proposed legislation being introduced in every one of our states. It just takes people who are willing to get informed and to get involved. Representative Ritter, thank you for your hard work and dedication there in Ohio to bring character and timeless principles back into the schools. Thank you for your time today.
Jeff, it's been my pleasure.
And Jameson, we appreciate the work that you're doing there at the Center for Governmental Renewal. How can people get in touch with you?
We are at afaaction.net. And if you have some pressing questions about this, feel free to email me. It's jamesontaylor@afa.net.
And we should mention that when you go to afaaction.net, you can check out the iVoter Guide, as well as subscribe to Action Alerts and get information on contacting your elected representatives. Plenty of resources there to help you make an impact in the culture today. Jameson, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for your work.
Well, it's amazing how many times the Bible teaches us to remember. From the fourth commandment to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, to the bread and cup of communion, believers are to remember. Well, this next week on Memorial Day, Americans will commemorate those 1.1 million members of our armed forces who've given the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. And with me to reflect on that is staff writer for The Stand magazine, Matthew White. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
You've written a great article. It's titled, Have We Forgotten? And it addresses some of the ways that Americans neglect to remember our fallen heroes. What prompted you to write that article in the first place?
Well, I wanted to write something a little bit different than sort of the typical story of, how Memorial Day came to be.
Yeah.
I think we've all heard that enough and are familiar with that. And so I was just doing some research, and I came across some statistics that just shocked me, and it caused me to begin to question, have we as a nation, have we forgotten?
You cited a couple of, and I'll give you some of these, and you may be referring to these, a couple of polls where adults were asked to identify the meaning of Memorial Day. So some of these were maybe, you know, just 2000, I think, was the first year that was done by the Gallup organization. And I tell you, these are amazing numbers. Only 28% in 2000 could identify Memorial Day as a day to honor fallen soldiers. You record that in 2019, a very similar study was done. The number jumped up to 55% who correctly identified the meaning of Memorial Day. That's a jump in numbers, and you were encouraged by that. Why do you think those numbers increased from 2000 to 2019?
Yes. I think probably my best guess would be 20 years of war in the Middle East. It's at the forefront, and there's really no escaping, you know, the fact that we were at war for so long. And then coupled with the popularity of veterans organizations today,
okay,
you see a lot on social media or commercials that are promoting care for our disabled veterans. And though that's talking about veterans who are alive, of course,
right.
It still causes one, I think, to consider that, yes, these are wounded veterans, but there obviously were many, many who never made it home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those things combined probably raised the needle a little bit on our understanding as a nation, you know, our understanding of a Memorial Day.
Well, I'm going to assume that our listening audience is highly above the average. So, but in your article, 55%, if that's true, then one out of two people don't know what Memorial Day is. I'm going to get you, if you will, to distinguish between Memorial Day and Veterans Day, and exactly give us just an overview of both of those days, if you will.
Sure. Yeah, I think both are very important. Veterans Day is when we honor our living veterans.
Okay.
And then, of course, Memorial Day is when we take time to reflect on the sacrifice that has been paid, and we honor those who didn't make it home, those who lost their lives in the pursuit of freedom.
You're a veteran. Have people expressed Happy Memorial Day to you in the past, or just kind of a misunderstanding of that day?
I do know that that happens. Yeah. I've seen that happen quite a bit.
I'm sure they don't mean any malice by that. They're just trying to honor veterans. But it is a day to remember those who have lost their lives. And in your article, you record that 1.1 million, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot. And of course, that goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
But yes, it is a lot of people who have given their lives for our freedom.
Mm. As a father and a veteran, how do you instill the importance of remembering these fallen in your home?
Sure. I think there are a number of things we can do. My wife has always done a really good job. Of course, we homeschool, and so that gives us a little bit more opportunity. Yep. But on Memorial Day or Veterans Day or any other special day for that matter, she will cater the class time to that particular day. So on Veterans Day, for example, she'd take all our kids out and go find veterans and okay. have, you know, written them cards and things of that nature. But as it pertains to Memorial Day, just spend some time with your children explaining to them what the soldiers have gone through, the price that men have paid for, or men and women have paid for our freedom. And one thing that we've done a number of times in the past, I think it really sort of brings it home, we have gone to cemetery on Memorial Day, mm-hmm. and we take little American flags and just walk throughout the cemetery, and at every stone or marker that designates that person was a soldier, we'd place a flag there. Mm-hmm. And if you can do something like that, it just really illustrates to the children, how many there are and sadly how many of those are not being honored today, because there'll be no flags there. You might go to a cemetery and find two or three or four flags that have been placed out by a family member, but the rest of those markers that for those soldiers, there's no flag there. Mm-hmm. And so we'll place flags there, and then if you can do that, and then if you could take a veteran with you on that day, okay. it makes it all the more special. On one of the occasions we did that, I was privileged to be able to take my grandfather, who was
really?
A Korean War
okay.
veteran. And so that was just a really special day to be able to do that. And, of course, he had all kind of stories to tell while we were there doing that, made it even better. And then after we would do something like that, we'd just sit in the parking lot and have a little conversation about why we did that, and then just pray and thank God for the sacrifices and for the freedom we enjoy today.
Yeah, so very simple.
Very, very simple. It cost you hardly anything, just a little bit of time.
Yeah, yeah. You also mentioned in your article, I think very rightly so, that there are a lot of people who will absolutely not forget, and those are the surviving family members who remember the loss of a father, a loved one, a mother. Speak to that, if you will, and the price that they have given themselves.
Yeah, it occurred to me as I was writing that article, the thought hit me that it is really a privilege to be able to forget. And what I mean by that is those who have lost loved ones, they can't forget. They have a folded flag on a mantle. Yep. They have a bedroom where a son will never return home to, and in many cases it remains the same that it was the day he left. There will be an empty seat yep. at the table for holidays. There will be a daughter who will walk down the aisle to be married, and her father won't be there to give her away, and many other examples I could give. But for those of us who've not lost one, we have a privilege to be able to forget, and yeah. those families do not enjoy that privilege. I'm not saying we should forget.
Sure.
But it just occurred to me what a privilege it is to have the freedom that we enjoy and to be able to forget where that freedom came from.
There's a powerful line in your article where you say the average American's view of Memorial Day proves that freedom is taken for granted when it costs a person nothing. And I think that, what you just said perfectly illustrates that these families, that the fallen heroes have paid, but these family members continue to pay.
Yeah, that's why I said in one portion of the article that we look at the number, the 1.1 million of those who've given their lives, we look at that number, but the number is really much, much greater than that, because that doesn't take into account the spouses, the children, the families that are left to live the rest of their lives with that loss.
Mm. I was privileged a few years ago to work with Whitney, your wife, on a project that she had in her heart, and through the leadership at AFA, those things came to fruition. It's a kids book series, and one of those books deals with Memorial Day.
Well,
the three books are, it's called The Covenant Creek Kids, and one of them deals with the patriotism, the feelings of honoring and loving our nation. One deals with Veterans Day, and one deals with Memorial Day.
Right.
These are great resources. Would you recommend these for families to use at home to teach their kids the importance of these?
Oh, absolutely. They're very interesting. They start out with sort of a mystery. You know, you have these grandkids that have this sort of gruff and tough grandfather, and they just don't know a whole lot about him, but they end up having to spend a summer with him and his wife, their grandmother, and through a course of events, they discover that he's a veteran, and then that opens up all the, you know, the doors of opportunity for him to begin to instill patriotism in them, and then that leads to celebrating Memorial Day and Veterans Day, and so it's really really good resource for youngsters or for parents to get for their youngsters to be able to teach them about the importance of these days.
Yeah, the book series is called The Covenant Creek Kids, and it's available at the AFA Resource Center, and we will put that link to those books on our podcast page. Great discussion on Memorial Day. We need to remember.
Amen, we do.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up next week, many of us will remember the 21 Christians that were brutally murdered on a beach in Libya back in 2015. Well, we'll talk with Mandy Hart, who has produced a film called The 21 that tells the unknown stories behind those brave men. We'll also tell you about an effort to protect the religious liberty of military chaplains. Don't miss your chance to get a free trial subscription to our Stand magazine. It's filled with the kinds of stories we've talked about today. Sign up at afa.net/thestand. And guest information and show notes on today's program are available on our podcast page at afr.net. Thanks so much for listening, and join us again next time on The Stand Radio.